You're going to be looking at 2 Chronicles 34 and 35. I'm not going to read all of it, but we'll just go through highlights as I go through this sermon. And it is the speaks of the life of King Josiah. So from in our concluding here, sermon series, now is the time. So it's a new year. We're still got a lot of it ahead of us. And I still think it's not too late to think about 11 more months. What do we want to do with it? And where do we want to focus our energies? So if we're going to accomplish something, we've got to find a way to focus. And I know that some of you are probably already feeling worn out from 2021. But you're here today, and that's good. And so I hope that you will see today that the most important thing is that not what you will do, but what you will receive from God. God has you here to renew you and refresh you to serve. Sunday, and our Christian Sabbath, is a day for renewal, to come back to before the presence of the Lord, to be strengthened, and then to be able to move out in service. So today, we're going back 2,600 years to a king in the land of Judah, and we will learn from him what is most important for renewal and what renewal looks like. Because King Josiah was a king who did it right. He gives us guidance on the most important resolutions we can make. And so let's take a look at his life. So we remember that God had established a single nation that was from the descendants of Abraham, or some of the descendants of Abraham. And they had come into the land of Canaan, and eventually they wanted a king, and they had Saul, then they had David, and then Solomon. And then after Solomon, under Rehoboam, the kingdom divided, and the book of 2 Chronicles tells us mostly the story of that southern kingdom where Jerusalem was, the kingdom of Judah, where the descendants of David reign, and Josiah was one of them. God had established his church in the Old Testament, his assembly, to be a light to the world. The brightest light was during the time of David and Solomon, but the light was still shining in Jerusalem. On the other hand, there was various times where it was dimmed greatly. The kings of Israel, the kings in the north, the northern kingdom was called Israel, southern kingdom was called Judah. The kings of the northern kingdom were uniformly bad. Some were worse than others, but they just did not follow the Lord or his instructions. The kings of Judah were a mixed bag. One of the worst of them was Manasseh. We looked at him last week. That is the grandfather of Josiah. Manasseh's son Amon took his place. And though Manasseh at the end of his life had turned back to seek the Lord, Amon went right back to what Manasseh was doing before, all the wrong things. And so the kingdom deteriorated. In fact, the people of Israel the people of Judah were so tired of it that they assassinated King Amon. And so that's where Josiah comes into that violent context, and he begins to be king at 8 years old. So 8 years old. And so he begins to reign. Again, he had most likely regents, as we call them, who ruled on his behalf. But we read in 2 Chronicles 34:3 this beautiful statement. In the eighth year of his reign, when he was 16 years old, it says, while he was still young, he began to seek the God of his father David. While he was still young, he began to seek the God of his father David. And I just think that's a great reminder for us all, whatever age we are, but especially for the kids, that while you're still young, you can seek the God of your fathers. You can seek the Lord. That means that you seek to know about him, to learn what he wants you to do, to learn and to seek his blessing on your life. Now, he began to seek the Lord, and no doubt for the next 4 years, it really bothered him how much idolatry there was in the land of Judah, because many of the practices of his father Amon were still in the land. But finally, when he was 20 years old, he made his move. It says in his 12th year, that is the 12th year of his reign, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem of high places, Asherah poles, and idols. And so he makes the move to do something about the wrong worship that was taking place. He takes up his responsibility to do what God had called him to do. But he didn't just seek to eliminate the wrong worship. He sought to build up the right worship. And in the Old Testament, the right worship of God was centered around a building that we call the temple. It's a building that was called the temple. And it says, in the 18th year, so now we have 6 years later, in the 18th year of Josiah's reign, he began to purify the land and the temple. To purify the land and the temple, he sent Shaphan, son of Azaliah, and Maaseiah, the ruler of the city, with Joah, son of Jehoahaz, the recorder, to repair the temple of the Lord his God. And so notice that they didn't just worship the wrong gods, but the true worship of God had deteriorated, and now Josiah was going to bring it back. And so they began the work in earnest to repair the temple and restore the true worship of God. And while they were cleaning up the temple and rebuilding, they found something. It says, while they were bringing out the money that had been taken into the temple of the Lord, Hilkiah the priest found the book of the law of the Lord that had been given through Moses. Hilkiah said to Shaphan the secretary, I have found the book of the law in the temple of the Lord. And so he gave it to Shaphan. 2 Chronicles 34, 14 through 15. I have found the book. God has not only given the temple to his people, he has given his very words to open up the keys to understanding the universe and the way to eternal blessedness and happiness. And yet, in Judah, where it should have been valued as their greatest possession, it had actually been lost. And so it wasn't until they cleaned the temple and cleared it out, they said, we found this book. And so they bring it before the king. And the king heard it. And as soon as he started hearing what God was commanding, he tore his clothes and he started weeping because he realized how that they had done nothing of what the Lord had asked them to do. And his heart was broken before the Lord. And so God saw that and he sent a prophet to speak to Josiah. And it says, this is what the Lord says. I am going to bring disaster on this place and people. However, God was going to relent at this time. He says, because your heart was responsive. Other translations have, because your heart was tender. I like that. Tender. And you humbled yourself before God when you heard when he spoke against this place and its people. And because you humbled yourself before me and tore your robes and wept in my presence, I have heard you, declares the Lord. And so we see once again, the Lord is merciful and gracious and full of kindness and compassion. He opposes sin for sure, but for those who will humble themselves and seek him, he will be found. As David told Solomon, if you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will reject you forever. If we will simply seek the Lord, like Josiah, humbling ourselves because of our sin and seeking the Lord's blessing, he will be found by us and we will experience his life and blessing. At this point, the king realized, we've got to kind of hit reset here. We need a fresh start. We have really done it wrong and we've got to start over. So what he did is he gathered everybody together. And they made a covenant. A covenant is really simply a commitment that we make. It could be things that we're already supposed to do, or it could be commitments that we create. So for example, when a husband and wife come together, they as a man and woman are not obligated to each other as husband and wife until they commit to one another. But when it comes to children, for example, we are required by the natural law and God's specific declaration to raise up our children in the fear of the Lord. And yet we might make a covenant to say we commit ourselves to do that, like we do at our baptism. So that's our obligation, but we make a covenant commitment to do that. And in this case, it was of the second kind. Israel was already obligated to do all the things that God had said. But then they said they wanted to say, come through and say, yes, we, by God's grace, are going to do that. And so listen to what he says in 2 Chronicles 34, 31 through 32. The king stood by his pillar and renewed the covenant in the presence of the Lord, to follow the Lord and keep his commandments, the statutes and decrees with all his heart and all his soul, and to obey the words of the covenant written in this book. Then he had everyone in Jerusalem and Benjamin pledge themselves to it. The people of Jerusalem did this in accordance with the covenant of God, the God of their ancestors. Now, obviously, if we are going to follow the Lord, we need his grace, but we also need to make a commitment to follow the Lord, and we commit to follow the Lord by his grace, dependent upon him, and that's what they did. And in a sense, every time we come to the Lord's Supper, we're renewing our commitment that we are going to follow the Lord, that we're going to trust him, that we're going to obey him, we're going to walk in his ways after having received of his grace and power. After he committed to the Lord, then they had a huge celebration. They celebrated they had the biggest Passover celebration in Judah's history. Listen to these words. The Passover had not been observed like this in Israel since the days of the prophet Samuel. And none of the kings of Israel had ever celebrated such a Passover as did Josiah with the priests, the Levites, and all Judah and Israel who were with the people of Jerusalem. So it wasn't just the people of Judah, it was people from the northern kingdom who came down to celebrate. Now the Passover celebrated God's victory, that Israel had been slaves in the land of Egypt, and that God had smashed Egypt and brought them out, liberating them from their slavery. But it also Passover also taught them that just like Egypt, they were liable to God's wrath and judgment. And they were reminded this by the fact that in the Exodus, they put the blood of the lamb on their doorposts so that the angel of death would pass over their houses and not strike down the firstborn as he did in Egypt. And so the Passover is always a reminder to them and to us that we are saved from God's wrath by the blood of the lamb. And Josiah wanted to make sure that everybody got this. And so listen to what he did. Josiah provided for all the lay people who were there a total of 30,000 lambs and goats for the Passover offerings, and also 3,000 cattle, all from the king's own possessions. A lot of meat. And so everyone could rejoice in what God had done and the transformation that had taken place. Unfortunately, Josiah, like all the other kings of Judah, didn't go on forever. He died, and he died a tragic death. When Pharaoh came to go through the land of Judah up to Mesopotamia, Josiah came out to meet him and to battle against him, and he disguised himself even when he went into battle, but still he was killed. And all the people, unlike his father Amon, whom they had assassinated, they wept and lamented for the loss of King Josiah. We read in 2 Chronicles 35, 25. Jeremiah composed laments for Josiah. And to this day, all the male and female singers commemorate Josiah in the laments. These became a tradition in Israel and are written in the laments. And so that is the life of Josiah. Now I want us to consider, what does this mean for us? And I want you to consider this in two different ways. One is an application of this story to God's redemption, and then an application of this story to our renewal. So the first part is the application to our redemption, because Josiah's work points forward to God's grace and his work in redeeming his people. So one of the things is that God promised is that when his people turned their back on the Lord, he wouldn't let that go on forever. He would turn them back himself. Listen to what Moses said in Deuteronomy 30, verse 6. He said, the Lord your God will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your descendants so that you may love him with all your heart and with all your soul and live. In other words, God was going to work in their hearts to change their hearts, so instead of rejecting God, they would turn in love to God. So this is a work of divine grace. And we can see how this worked out, and even in the book of Chronicles, in First Chronicles, when the people were going to build the temple, they gave generously to the work of building the temple, and this is what David prayed. He said, Lord, the God of our fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, keep these desires and thoughts in the hearts of your people forever, and keep their hearts loyal to you. So we learn that if we're going to be loyal to the Lord, and if the people are going to be loyal to the Lord, then this is dependent upon God's grace. We can't do it without divine aid. And so if we see that people are doing what they're supposed to do in restoring the temple, this is an answer to David's prayer, and this is an evidence of divine grace. So we should see the work of God in the generations, that he brings about renewal, revival, reformation. The kings also point to Christ. Some of them, in a negative way, say, we don't want a king like that. We're looking forward to a king like Jesus. In other ways, the good kings show, in some respects, the glory of the reign of Christ, yet imperfectly, because they often have specific imperfections that are mentioned, and because eventually they die, and so they don't last. And so consider the life of Josiah in light of how it teaches us about Jesus. From a young age, Christ seeks to know his father. Christ confronts and opposes the idolatry in the land. Christ rebuilds the worship of the Lord and establishes a house for his name in the church. Christ loves the will of the Father, and his heart is tender toward his word. Christ provides the Passover for the people, not by providing thousands of lambs, but through the sacrifice of himself, the true Passover lamb. As Paul said, Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed for us. So whenever we see the Passover in the Old Testament, we should think Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed for us. Christ loves his people and does all that he does, not merely for himself, but for the sake of others. Christ dies and is lamented by his people, but he does not stay dead. He rises again to reign over the kingdom forever, just as God promised to David. A king like Josiah, but far better. And by contemplating the life of Josiah, we may get a little bit different perspective on Jesus and appreciate the type of king that we have. King Josiah is not only a pointer to Christ, though, he is also a pointer to us. He is a model. When the prophets wrote the book of 2 Chronicles, they were writing in a way to encourage the people to seek renewal, revival, and reformation, just like Josiah did. And so we can learn from Josiah what it means for us in our lives, in our church, in our families, in our nation, to seek renewal and reformation and revival. And you can see that he teaches us several important lessons. One of the things that we struggle with is that we have patterns from our families. Many of those patterns have helped us. They've shown us that we need to do certain things, that we need to, even the simple things like preparing our meals and planning ahead and learning to save and looking for a job, things like that, all these things that our families really give us the pattern of how to live. But families are always a mixed bag, even the best ones. And they bring some negative baggage as well. And some families bring a lot of negative baggage. Josiah was in one such family. But the thing is about Josiah is he didn't let the bad family patterns that he had keep him from seeking the Lord. He said, I don't have to wait for my family to get better, for my family to get fixed. Now is the time for me to seek the Lord. Josiah also did not wait till he was older. He did not wait till he had gained enough wisdom or gotten established enough. From a young age, it says, he began to seek the Lord. Now is the time. Moreover, Josiah didn't let the fact that it was difficult deter him. People did not want the idols to be removed. He was going to face opposition. Things had deteriorated, and he had to work hard to get the temple where it needed to be. But he didn't let the difficulty of the task deter him. He said, now is the time. Josiah also knew, looking forward, that the future was unsure. He didn't know how things would turn out or how long even his kingdom would last. But he didn't let that keep him from trying to build something good. He said, now is the time to build and do something for the Lord. And he shows us also a pattern of how we are to seek renewal. In three things. First, it begins with gospel-centered worship. That we begin by seeking the Lord through Jesus Christ, finding our hope and acceptance in Him. Even when we've sinned, we find His grace and forgiveness because the Passover lamb has been sacrificed for us. And so that's where it all starts. It doesn't start with our labor. It starts with the labor of God on our behalf. And that's always where we need to begin. That God accepts us, that He's justified us, and that He's empowering us to serve Him. But then that should not lead us to passivity. It needs us to lead us to obedience. And that is why maybe some of you need to clean out your rooms, and you may say, I have found the book. It is there under a pile of other things, pile of papers, or whatever it may be. And you pull the book out and you open it up with a sense that I want to do what it says. And when you see you haven't, you humble yourself and repent. When you see what you need to do, that you seek to do it by God's grace, seeking Him for His help. We need to find the book in 2021 and let that be our guide. But then thirdly, we should not just think about ourselves. We need to think about the communities of which we are a part. A lot of our religious heritage and evangelicalism in America is it tends to be individualistic. Like it's just me and God or me and the Bible and so on. And there is an individual aspect. Each one of us is responsible for ourselves. But the faith that we have is never meant to just stay here. It's always meant to flow out there in love. Faith working through love. And you see that Josiah, when he started thinking about renewal, he began with himself. He sought the Lord while he was young, but he did not let it stop there. He started thinking about his nation. He started thinking about the things that need to be done. He started to think about things that need to be opposed. He started thinking about things that need to be built. He brought everybody in. He provided what they need so they could worship the Lord. And so it's not enough for us just simply to find renewal in our own hearts. We have to let that flow out to others. That's how God has made us. He's not made us to be just mere individuals, isolated individuals. He's made us to be a community, a political community, and a nation, family community, neighborhoods, churches, and so on. And so we got to ask, as we seek to renew, what can I do that would help bring renewal in my family, in my business, in my school, in my neighborhood, in my city, in my nation, and my church? And that is our obligation as well. And so, as you think about your resolutions, make sure you begin in the right place with seeing the greatness of what God has done for you. It's always got to start there. But that needs to move us outward, to do something big, to do something that's difficult, to do something that's challenging. And when we start getting involved in people, it'll be challenging. But that is what God has called us to. That's how he brings renewal to the world, through people like you and like me. And so, my friends, we live in a time of much uncertainty. We don't know what the next few years are going to bring us, but we don't have to let that deter us from seeking to build something good. We can move forward. We can seek renewal, revival, and reformation in ourselves and the communities in which we are a part. We don't have to take on all the things of the world, but we can move from where we are, where God has placed us, in our own life and the lives of those around us, to seek renewal for the glory of God, for the good of those around us, for the good of ourselves. Now is the time. Amen.